Here is the makings of a big mess. 9 million patients, 320,000 employees, 971 hospitals, and a $165 billion budget. Oof. I'm talking about the VA system, of course, which has been dogged by a scandal about appointment wait times. Joining us now is Philip Carter. He's director of the Veterans Research Program at the Center for a New American Security. That is a think tank in Washington, D.C., focusing on defense and security. He's a lawyer, author, and served in the U.S. Army in Iraq. Phil, thank you so much for joining us.
Hi, how are you?
Phil, you just wrote an article for Slate where you suggested six ways to fix the VA. But to get started, I wanted to ask you to sum up the biggest challenges that have dogged the VA that have come out as the scandal has come to light.
The biggest challenge with the VA is its size. Within its massive $160 billion budget, it can be hard to figure out where you're allocating resources, or even if you're allocating enough resources to serve the 6 million or so veterans that come through the VA's doors for healthcare each year. And that's really the root issue beneath this waitlist scandal. It's not so much that VA employees are cooking the books, although it's apparent they are. It's more that they're doing so to obfuscate what is clearly either a lack of resources or a misallocation of resources or both.
So let's start with the fixes, and your number one fix is about resources. What would the VA need to do their job?
The VA's healthcare system gets about $60 billion a year right now from the federal government, and there's a group of veterans that estimates that it would require between $5 and $7 billion more to fully resource this system. The issue is how much care the VA can afford to provide to veterans who don't have a service-connected disability but still want to go to the VA for health care. The VA has long gone back and forth on this issue based on its resources. In 2009, Secretary Shinseki opened the doors wider and allowed all these veterans to come through, so-called Priority Group 8 veterans. But this has put a real crimp on the VA's ability to provide care. And they really have a choice. Either they get a lot more money or they restrict care to only those with service-connected disabilities and certain other conditions. But they can't do both. They can't provide care to all veterans with the current budget.
If they want to provide care to all veterans, what do they need? More doctors, more nurses, more of everything?
To provide more care, the VA needs both more resources and a better allocation of resources. The population of veterans has changed a lot in the last 20 or 30 years. It's grown much older, much more geographically dispersed, and also concentrated in new places. Instead of having large veterans populations in cities like Detroit and Pittsburgh and Cleveland, you now have the second largest vets community in the country in Phoenix. As the median age for veterans has risen to 64, a lot of veterans are moving to places like Florida, then Arizona and California, the warm weather states, as part of retirement. And the VA needs to change too, and not just change where its facilities are, but what kinds of facilities it has. Overall, medicine has gone much more towards the use of outpatient clinics and more flexible networks of care. The VA needs to embrace that model more than it has. It has 800 plus clinics already, but it needs to move further in that direction.
So would that mean perhaps closing some hospitals and putting them somewhere else, breaking them up?
Yes, it would mean closing some facilities or shrinking others. And therein lies the rub, because doing so is extraordinarily political. The VA is, you know, perhaps the most political agency because of how many people it touches, how large its budget is, and the fact that these facilities are in every congressional district across the country. And you can imagine the firestorm that occurs anytime the VA wants to adjust its footprint.
There is a saying that goes, if you've been to one VA hospital, you know one VA hospital. They are very different. And what does that tell us about leadership and what might have to change in that regard?
So there was a strategic choice made when the VA system was designed to decentralize the system as much as possible and vest as much decision-making in the hospital leadership as possible, to put decision-making close to the patient instead of the VA central office. That's been good for some aspects of care, but it makes it very hard to standardize care, to standardize electronic technology, to standardize policy, and also to do audits and really to ensure compliance across the system. And so there's a debate right now in Washington about how much you might change that balance between central office control and authorities that are vested at the VA's 151 medical centers.
Could the VA work more effectively with the private sector?
One of the truths about veterans' healthcare is that most veterans go to non-VA facilities for their healthcare. That's where I go. That's where a number of my friends go. The VA tends to see an older patient census, and it tends to see a census of patients with service-connected disabilities, but only about a third of veterans get regular care there. And so I think the VA needs to partner much more effectively with the other places where veterans go for care and potentially find ways to leverage their capacity where in places like Phoenix, the VA is having trouble making ends meet.
Now, Phil, Secretary Eric Shinseki has resigned. Who would want to take over his job? I mean, it sounds like the most daunting experience you could dream up.
It does. And I wrote in Slate that Secretary Shinseki's replacement needed to be, you know, sort of part Eric Shinseki, part Bill Clinton, part Mitt Romney, because of the leadership, political, and business skills that he or she had to bring to the table. Reports out of the White House suggest that the CEO of the Cleveland Clinic, the major healthcare system in Ohio, is the leading candidate for this job. And he probably has the right CV. He was a decorated Vietnam veteran, served as a surgeon in the military many, many years ago, and has since become one of the nation's leading and most respected healthcare executives. That's probably the right skill set, although the VA is more than 10 times larger than the system he's used to leading, and it's far more political. So it's not enough to just be a great healthcare manager. He's also going to have to step up to act on a political plane that I think is new and very different.
Does it have to be somebody with a military record, or is that just how it's done?
Culturally, the Department of Veterans Affairs is most likely to accept a leader with some military service. It doesn't need to be a retired general like Eric Shinseki, but it's hard to imagine a secretary succeeding there without some deep appreciation for the VA and its culture, which is derivative of the military culture. Now, that could have been gotten through a residency at a VA facility or long service within the military as a civilian, but there's something, a sort of street credibility that you get when you actually serve in uniform and particularly serve in combat, as Dr. Toby Cosgrove, the current candidate to lead the VA, did in Vietnam, that I think is important for leading this agency.
Philip Carter is director of the Veterans Research Program at the Center for a New American Security. That's a nonpartisan think tank on defense and national security in Washington, D.C. He's also a lawyer, an author, and he served in the U.S. Army in Iraq. Phil, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.